classically when a crazy woman starts a fire. She starts a fire in one place and then she goes back to bed.
Yeah, it's just one and done, baby. She's not going to burn that kid.
Why would she?
She's too cute.
It's just, she's just your wife, and that's your child that you had with your lover.
Well, hey, Lillian, what's happening?
I'm good, Piper. I hope you're good also. It's a lovely Saturday morning because we can't help but tell our listeners what's happening here. We're also recording way early for when this comes out, so you guys will hear this in the future. But today we watched the first four episodes of The Crown season, whatever the most current season is, definitely for sure.
Okay.
So let's talk about that instead of Jane Eyre.
Sure. So I guess I have watched four episodes of this show that I've famously said I have no interest in.
It's not the first. I also bullied you into watching the current season because I wanted to know what you thought about Princess Diana in my head. I just was watching this show like, well, so what we actually watched was the Czech adaptation of Jane Eyre, which we'll talk about for real. I just was watching. I told Piper a fun little bit. She's looking at me like I'm crazy.
I'm like, I just don't know where this is going, but I guess I'll keep nodding and smiling and being like, okay, go on.
What I'm trying to say is I really want to talk about The Crown.
Okay,
so
see.
So I guess if any of our listeners want my thoughts on The Crown, I don't know, call me. I'd love to tell you them.
Awesome. Great. I would honestly probably rather talk to you about the show I haven't seen than the show that we just watched. Because, boy, when I was thinking about how to open this, I'm like, well, this is our final adaptation that we're talking about, and we saved the most boring for last. And that's maybe a little harsh to say.
It's not their fault.
But oh my God, at least that last episode, which was an hour long, and like, I'm like, I don't care. And I was skipping through so many scenes. So it's in a language I don't understand. And they're not doing a lot. They're just standing there talking. And I'm like, oh boy, okay.
We'll talk about this, but yeah, that's not what my experience watching this was. There's a small chance that for the last episode, I discovered that you can, in fact, watch YouTube videos at 2x speed.
Nice.
And for all
handy.
Every scene Sinjin was in, I just was like, yeah, I'm for sure following what's going on. And the thing is, like, we know this story well enough that I actually was. It's just, I was watching Jane Eyre in my head as much as I was watching it on the screen. Because
it is
a lot of exposition. I'm sure if you spoke Czech, this would be a much better adaptation than Piper and I's experience watching this.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And I know, Lillian, you also said before we started that you were thinking that one thing you wanted to talk about is just kind of comparing foreign language adaptations in general. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that has become the most interesting thing about this most recent viewing experience anyway, is simply like glancing up at the screen, seeing what's happening. And I'm like, okay, is this the proposal? Yep, there it goes. Okay, awesome. Just kind of like guessing, and I'm like, is this what's happening now? Oh, I guess they're doing that scene. All right, cool. Just like trying to figure it out, but knowing the story well enough that even though they're like jumping and cutting out significant moments, I'm like, okay, I guess that's what's happening here.
Exactly, 100% exactly. Just a heads up here up at the top, I don't think this will be something that you guys will experience much, but my handyman is here doing some work on some windows downstairs at my house, and my dog is number one security girl, so she is actively barking in the background. I can hear her right now. You're just hearing my life, guys. It's a little peek behind the curtain. Just because our experience watching this was boring doesn't mean your experience listening to us talk about should be.
And I don't think you can hear it on my end, but my handyman husband is outside working in his wood shop making frames for art. So that's what's happening outside my window right now.
I'm really proud of us.
I know.
We found men to go do work for us while we can talk about Jane Eyre, which
incredible.
Is the dream.
Yes. So in case you are a person who is like, I don't know what Jane Eyre is, but somebody told me to listen to this. Don't worry. I'm going to tell you the story real fast. Jane Eyre is the story of a governess who falls in love with her boss. And he doesn't really appreciate personal space. He gets up in her business a whole lot and they're very romantic to each other. And then she saves him from a fire. And then one day there's a party and a bunch of people and he dresses up in a costume. And a guy comes and ruins the party. And then she helps with an assault in the middle of the night. And they have a cute little romantic moment and he proposes to her and she's like, no way, you can't be into me. You're flirting with that other girl the whole time. He's like, nope, did it just to make you like me. And she's like, ah, it worked. I'm going to marry you. And then they are getting married. And then a guy interrupts and says, ah, sorry, babe, he's already married. And she's like, ah, darn. And then they see the lady who's his wife and she strangles him. And then they have a long conversation about why he did this in her bedroom. And then she goes off and is at a school and there's this awful guy there. And he's like, I hate women, but I guess I want to marry you for whatever reason. And she's like, no, thanks. I'm going to go back to the guy because I would rather be his whore than your wife. And she goes back and he's blind, but his wife is dead. I assume they tell her that because we don't see it happen. And then they get together and it's great. The end.
That was 1 minute and 11 seconds, which nice. Is short for us. Proud of us. I have decided that we should make merch that is available to others. And our first merch should be a t-shirt that has St. John and Rochester's face on it. And it says, I'd rather be his whore than your wife.
See, my brain is just nothing but Titanic right now. Cause I've been working on this Titanic fan fiction. And that's a line that Rose says to Cal. And so like at the spoiler alert for the end of this movie, there's like a scene where she's like staring into a mirror and they're fading back and forth images of Rochester or St. John. And it's just like, boy, who am I going to choose? And I just imagined that line working so well there of her telling St. John that she's going off to be with this guy, this married man that she'd rather be with than him. So yeah. Ugh,
yeah. So the high level stuff about this show is it's from 1972. Mm-hmm. It is from, as I'm hoping you've guessed, the Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. It is not called Jane Eyre. It's called Jaina Ervoa, which is just ever so slightly different. All the names were just different enough that it made it even harder to follow. Mm-hmm. Like instead of Adele, they called her Adelko. They added like a little, Piper's looking at me like she didn't even register that.
Well, I knew they were saying different names. But yeah, I was like, oh, I couldn't tell you. If you asked me right now, except for Rochester, which is the one name I heard repeatedly. If you asked me what everyone else's, Mrs. Fairfax was also just Fairfax, I think.
Yeah, she had a different honorific, but she was Fairfax was her last name, and Mason was Mason.
Yes, and Blanche wasn't Blanche, but she was clearly like Blanco or something like that.
Yeah,
and it just like it's very funny to hear that name in different languages because I just imagine them being like, "Hey, Whitey, what's up, White?" It's just like. She's white. Did you know?
Did you know that she's super, like, honestly, if we're totally honest with ourselves, she's the whitest person I know.
Yeah.
But yeah, the first episode, so they skip the childhood, which is interesting because they do come back to have Aunt Reed's death scene. So they skip the childhood. Then the first episode has a full 16 minutes of Jane and Mrs. Fairfax sitting and having a conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I did a little bit of my Google Translate thing. So I'm sure that the conversation gave us like a lot of backstory, told us a lot about Jane, told us a lot about Rochester. It gave us a lot of the conversation that they have when she first arrived, but then also gives us additional background to sort of catch us up to speed on Jane's life and what she's doing here. This is a surprisingly true adaptation, particularly relative to our other non-English adaptations that we've watched. So this is our fourth non-English one. We've watched Singdell, an Italian one, a Spanish one, and then this Czech one. And I either past me did this and I forgot about it, or I accidentally put them in the order that they came out, because Singdell was 51, the Italian was 57, Spanish one was 71, and this was 72.
Cool. Yeah. I definitely got the impression that it was being very true to the original text, just given how long the dialogue scenes were. Oh my God. So I assume they were pretty much just like reading from the novel.
The bits that I caught, like, I think there's more. So there's more of a difference in language between English and Czech. Mm-hmm. It has a different, it's a Slavic language. So there's just a different root to most of the words. So therefore the translation just gets more difficult. Mm-hmm. So there was less, like when I was watching the Spanish one, like Google Translate was often translating it directly into lines from Jane Eyre. So it was clearly like one to one, where this was a lot more like the vibe of Jane Eyre.
Cool.
Which, again, this is, if we had more resources, guys, we would have someone who speaks the language of these adaptations, watch them and come talk to us about them. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we haven't said it enough recently, and some people might get confused as we're almost 2 years into this. We are two goobers. We do not know things.
My part of my viewing experience right before I hopped on this call, because I was just wrapping up the final episode. I was watching this in bed and Sam came upstairs to grab something and he just glances at the TV and he's like, huh, no subtitles, huh? And I'm like, yep. And I'm like, and these people are really chewing the scenery because, boy, it's a lot of standing around and talking.
It's so much standing around and talking. It's which like, so is Jane Eyre. Like, I get it. Because part of what I love about period dramas, and sometimes I refer to as parlor dramas, is the idea that it's the conversation and nuance and people's social life has inherent drama and value and is like as much like the action and excitement of life as going out and fighting with swords. But wow, is that less true when you don't understand the words they're saying?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why I found this one of the most boring to watch, is because where some of the other ones, like with Same Deal, we were getting a glimpse of a different culture, like a very different culture from our own, getting to see the different like costumes and settings and different things like
numbers.
That.
And musical numbers.
Yeah, exactly. So like that was really interesting. And then with the Italian one and the Spanish one, those were a bit more like dramatic and over the top. Mm-hmm. So like without like the understanding the exact words, I still got a big performance I got to see. This was a very like reserved, it felt like it just could have been like a classic like English style presentation of Jane Eyre just in a different language. And so because we didn't see different interesting costumes, like these were, you know, similar period accurate looking costumes, and the delivery was all very kind of straightforward and reserved, and so it's just like, I mean, yeah, it just wasn't as interesting to consume if you can't understand what they're saying.
For sure. And I think it's tough because that's not necessarily a criticism of the piece. It's more of a criticism of us for not speaking all the languages in the world.
I know.
Which, what have we been doing with our lives if not learning all the languages that Jane Eyre was adapted into? We had 2 years. We could have learned Czech.
Seriously. Although I'm realizing right now, when your earlier comment of like, we should have gotten someone who speaks this language. Do you remember my foreign exchange sister, Jana?
Oh my God. Does Jana speak Czech?
I would not be surprised. She speaks like 7 languages. And I'm sure Czech is one of them. We could have invited her on and she could have told us everything, but.
Well, we've made a terrible mistake. The other mistake, here's another mistake that I made. So as I've said before on this show, the more boring the adaptation, the more Googling I do while I'm watching it. Mm-hmm. And so I was Googling kind of like Czech Jane Eyre, like all sorts of stuff. And I came across this academic paper that I read the abstract of, but I didn't read the whole paper, obviously. I wish that I had found it before so I had enough time to read the whole thing. But it was an analysis of Jane Eyre's effect and commentary and how it's relevant to other cultures, the same way that it's part of what made me think about the adaptations that we've watched. So Same Deal in particular, like that was an adaptation. There's a couple other adaptations of Jane Eyre in Hindi, I don't know if there's others in other, there's a lot of other languages spoken in India, so I don't know if there's other languages that it's been adapted into, but Sangdel in particular became a like cultural phenomena that a lot, there's adaptations of that movie. So it's like they're telling the story of Jane Eyre, but they're really telling the story of Sangdil, but they're, so that is sort of like a circular. I wish I could have found more versions that were accessible to us. The only one I could find was like genuinely like multiple seasons, like 80 hours of a show that did not have subtitles that we, we just can't do it, guys.
Yeah, I'm not quite that invested, unfortunately.
It's interesting to think. So it's interesting to think about like why Jane Eyre became that important in India. And I think there's this layer there of they were colonized by the UK. And so like English influence and English culture there is just like really entwined in a lot of the history there. And that's not to say I'm very anti-colonialism, if anybody just to straight up and down say that. But I think then you look at Spain and Italy, and they're both from very Western cultures, and this is a classic piece of Western literature. And that's not to say the Czech Republic is not a part of the West, but mm-hmm. it is like it was a part of the Soviet Union. It's a part of this sort of other. I think it was part of the Soviet Union. Please know that I don't know a lot about Czech history, and I'm sorry. But this interestingly, this piece was about why Jane Eyre and the criticisms of cultural hierarchy and religious structure and all of that stuff, all of those criticisms are deeply relevant in the Czech Republic. And that's why this piece, like Jane Eyre, became so relevant in this country. And so this paper, which I'll find the link to and put it in the description in case anybody else is as interested as I am, is sort of about the idea of like why was this so influential in this country that is fairly far removed from English culture, mm-hmm. and ultimately like why did this adaptation become one that was important? Like why in 1972 did they make an adaptation of Jane Eyre that is so true to the book and has so much conversation that really leans into those criticisms of religion and cultural structure?
Well, that's awesome. I wish we had read that too.
I know.
I can actually comment on it, but that's homework for super fans to go off and check that out.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that that's something that was in my mind. I saw that as abstract, like partly through episode one. I have some specific notes about things that happened in episode one. The meeting the horse on the road scene was pretty good. I liked that Rochester falls off the horse. The horse lands on top of him. Mm-hmm. And then Jane, just like in the Spanish one where the horse rides away.
Yeah.
Except in that one, was it the Spanish one or the Italian one?
I think it was the Italian one.
Okay.
Where the horse runs off and is free forever, becomes a wild stallion.
And she like goes and gets people who carry him home. Mm-hmm. But in this one, the horse rides away, but Jane runs down the road and chases this horse down and like calms it down and brings the horse back to him and mm-hmm. then helps him on the horse because this Jane is very strong.
Yeah. Yeah. No, she's capable too. She's got it all mm-hmm. under control. This one was, there was no moors really. This was like a very foresty kind of mm-hmm. location. So this is just like a long stretch of road through like these very well manicured trees. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the setting that they meet in. So first of all, both of these actors are gorgeous.
Yes.
This guy was like one of the youngest looking, like modern, attractive Rochesters that I think we've seen, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I thought what he reminded me of, first of all, he reminds me of I think Diego Luna is the actor's name, who's in like the best, most recent Star Wars movies. So, because he had similar facial hair and like long hair on top to that guy. But then in addition to like reminding me of Diego Luna, he also made me think, I was like, okay, if the CW were to make a version of Jane Eyre with like their edgy, like Rivendell kind of style, they would cast a guy who looks like this with a very modern, like scruffy, like short trimmed facial hair look and this long edgy hairdo. So I was like, this is the CW version of Rochester.
Piper's not a huge CW fan, as you can tell by the fact that she said Rivendell instead of Riverdale.
Yeah, I don't care for that shit, man. I don't even. Clearly I'm not a fan.
But yeah, no, I definitely see that, because she was also, I mean, she's gorgeous. She's like, of course, she's so beautiful. And I think very similar to, I didn't catch any lines in the book or in the translation saying that she was very plain. So I don't think they tried to lie to us and tell us that this gorgeous model of a woman was anything less than that. But they did have a lot of, and I noticed this in the first couple of scenes and then I noticed it later as well. The other maids in the house, so Grace Poole, and they didn't give the actress who's supposed to be Grace Poole, and then a couple other maids. We get like a lot of them sneaking around in the background in this, and like gossiping with each other, and like they're all clearly actively hiding Bertha. Like they're all just like a part of that. Like Mrs. Fairfax is constantly being like, she's like not here, right? And they're like, you're good to go. You can bring Jane through the hallway now. And I'm just like, why are you all conspiring to keep this away from this one person who also works here?
Yeah, right. I don't know. It's fun to have secrets, Lillian.
That's true. I always forget about that.
Exactly. This was also like the youngest Miss Fairfax we've seen.
Like, yeah.
When they first showed her, I was like, wait, is this Blanche already? But no, they're like, oh, that's Fairfax. And I was like, oh, this is a young, pretty Fairfax. Okay, cool.
And she's also quite intense for a Miss Fairfax. Miss Fairfax is, we've talked about Miss Fairfax in the book, we think of as kind of sweet and bumbly, and maybe like she just didn't really care to know the mystery of the house. She just looks, somebody says that's Grace Poole laughing because she knits in the attic, and Miss Fairfax like, okay. And this Miss Fairfax was not that. She was quite intense. She wasn't mean, which sometimes they can be mean, but she was a little bit more intense. So the end of the first episode is the fire scene, and the whole room is on fire, not just the bed. Please, did you also notice that?
I did. Well, I thought it was funny that when she goes to grab the water pitcher, she first throws it at some flames nearby her before she goes to him to put out his bed fire. And I was like, maybe that was just a direction to be like, oh, well, like, take care of your immediate safety and then go help the guy. But those flames were so small. And I was like, why are you wasting your time on these little flames? Your boss is burning alive. Like, go help him out.
Yeah, it just was very different from what we've seen before. It also was the most physically affected Rochester has been by a fire that we've seen, because not only was he like unconscious through the whole putting out of the fire, but after the fire was put out, it took him like some time to recover from that.
Yeah, really coughing that smoke out of his lungs. The other thing that struck me about this scene, and this is just how I interpreted it, again, did not have the actual dialogue to guide me, but like, there's a moment, I assume it's the moment when Jane is like, oh, I'm going to go get Miss Fairfax so she can help us. And he has this very big reaction to be like, no, like, don't do that. Just stay here. And like the scene, the way I interpreted this that I've never really gotten from other things before, and maybe I'm just being generous, I'm like kind of leading into it, but I kind of got the sense that like, if it wasn't actually about him being like, no, don't involve other people, if we think about it from this idea that he's like, okay, I know that my very unstable, dangerous wife is potentially loose in the halls. I don't want her to go out there and encounter Bertha and get hurt. Like, so stay here where you're safe, and I'm going to go out to where the danger is and try to like kind of secure this dangerous person. So if that's a generous reading, great.
No, I like that. I think it's interesting to think about that could be true of all of them, right? Like, I've never mm-hmm. thought about that before. Like, that is, I think, a generous reading, but that could be true in the book as well, that he's going running around and checking on stuff. It reminds me of what Patrick said in our episode on the 43 rewatch of Jane forgets about Adele, but Rochester really forgets about Adele, because that's the one where they do end up going and checking on him later. Mm-hmm. Where in the book and in the other adaptations, nobody even bothers to check on her.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she's probably fine.
She's probably fine.
Kids are resilient. Those burn scars will heal real fast.
You know how classically when a crazy woman starts a fire, she starts a fire in one place and then she goes back to bed.
Yeah, it's just one and done, baby. She's not going to burn that kid.
Why would she? She's too cute. She's just your wife, and that's your child that you had with your lover.
Yeah, yeah.
She has nothing against that child.
Exactly. Look, Bertha may try to kill a governess, but killing kids, that's a little too far even for her.
But she has a classic conversation with Grace immediately after that, which again, like, it is one of those things. I was thinking this. I don't want to bum everybody out, but like, while I was watching this, I just was feeling a bit like, oh, it's Jane Eyre. I've watched this so many times. There is nothing new and interesting about this to me. And it's mm-hmm. part of the reason why we're
wrapping this up
is because yeah. that's not a fun podcast to listen to.
No, it's not.
Go ahead.
I was gonna move on to when party people arrive.
Yes.
Okay, so, like, my first thing is that, like, when we see Blanche, I'm like, this definitely feels like the conversation thing that we say all the time. Because, like, mm-hmm. so many Blanches have that exact same, like, style riding hat. And maybe yeah. it's just people doing research on the fashion, and that's what a lady of her position would wear when she's riding up to her boyfriend's house. But, like, it's always this little top hat with, like, kind of a veil going off the back. And I'm like, that's Blanche, all right.
Yep, no, you did it. You put her on a horse, and she's yeah. wearing a top hat on a horse. Mm-hmm. I also loved the way they had a servant, like, standing out. So, like, Jane isn't really engaged in what's happening in the house. She's being really sad about the fact that Rochester's gone. Mm-hmm. And there's a servant waiting outside, and he sees the party coming, and he freaks out and sprints into the house, and everyone devolves into chaos. And that was, like, the funniest thing to me, of just Jane being, like, kind of melancholy and just, like, being sad and wandering about. Meanwhile, everyone around her is like, oh my God, our boss is back. He brought a bunch of friends. We are not ready for this. Someone do something. And Jane's just like, oh, I just, like, thought he had a crush on me and I have a crush on him. And then they're being like, I frankly, girl, don't care. Do yeah. have to get the house ready. They're literally on the driveway.
It's like, look, yes, you technically live here, but you also work here. So get to work. I was delighted that we had a full cross-dressing fortune teller scene.
Woof. It was so much. They really, like, his entire body is covered in sparkly cloth. Like, he was wearing multiple layers over his full suit, which we mm-hmm. find out when he removes his lendings. That must have been so toasty in there. I couldn't stop thinking about that.
Oh my gosh. But we also, like, they almost went the Sangdil route, where we have a scene that, like, I think it's implied that he's even throwing off, like, the servants. He's even, like, yeah. masquerading to them. Because there's a scene where, like, one of the servants is letting the fortune teller woman into this room, and it's uh-huh. him in his costume, and he's fully in character. He's got a stick that he's, like, wrapping around uh-huh. to be like, what is this space? I've never been here before. Definitely not the master of this house. I'll just sit in my favorite chair. I mean, a chair that I think probably the guy who owns this place would like.
And he, like, points at the candles and have him turn it on. Then he points at the shutters, at, like, the blinds, and says, like, close those. And they close the curtains. And then he, like, almost chases the servant out of the room, where he's like, get out.
He's like, this is going to be so fun for me.
He's like, I've got a really good plan and I can't have you messing it up. And then we watch, like, this is what I think the pacing of this, it's it's true to the book, but oh my God, is it boring?
Yeah.
We watch every young woman go in and get her fortune read.
Yeah.
And we watch the reactions of every single one of them. And it genuinely, like, this is a 45 minute episode. Mm-hmm. And like half of it is the reactions of people about the fortune teller.
Yes. Yeah. It's a lot.
And then during the fortune teller scene, they also picked the handful of things they did that were less book accurate was they told a lot of scenes from a different perspective than Jane's, which we mm-hmm. usually get Jane's perspective for reasons that astound me. Their perspective they chose to show for the fortune teller scene was Grace Poole's.
Yeah.
Because Grace Poole is listening at the door for most of this scene. And I'm just like, why am I supposed to care? Like, is this them trying to lean into the red herring of Grace Poole that, like, she's doing something malicious? Mm-hmm. Or, like, now, I'm not going to lie to you. I would also eavesdrop on that conversation. There's nothing that would stop me from doing that. But why am I not watching the conversation? Like, you can show me Grace Poole once and then show me Jane trying to figure out if this is what's going on here, because she does not have a big reaction when mm-hmm. Rochester reveals himself, which makes me think she figured it out.
Right.
But we just watch her figure it out.
I was just about to like lead the conversation down this like thought exploration to be like, okay, so this staff, we've confirmed that this household is very close and they love secrets. Mm-hmm. And so anytime somebody knows anything, everyone else is going to know about it. So let's just say the guy who led Rochester in disguise into the room, like, leaves. And he's like, guys, our boss is dressed like an old lady. And everyone's like, what? And like, they're like, wait, we have to like serve the hors d'oeuvres and we have to stay down here in the kitchen. And Grace is like, I'm going to go sneak up and listen. I'm going to get the info. And like goes up there to like report back to everybody.
Yeah, it's that classic thing of like anyone who's like worked. I used to work in catering when I was in college, and we would like when you were going back to like bring in like dirty plates or like exchange whatever, you would be like, oh my God, this one lady, like you have to look when you go back out there, like look at this lady because she's wearing this weird hat or whatever. Or like I think the couple at table 7 is breaking up. So like, we should know about that. So whoever's table that is, like, tell us about what's happening there. And it feels like they were like, oh my God, he wants Jane to go in. What? I thought he was just I thought he was probably trying to figure out with Blanche. No, I told you he has a crush on Jane and Jane has a crush on him. We need to know what they're saying to each other. And that's mm-hmm. when Grace goes up is like all these people are talking about it behind their backs, which is why like Jane does not have all this information because she's the subject of the gossip, not,
yes, exactly.
Not the participant in it.
And just to take it one step further, because like you said, so much of this is just like the door will open and Blanche will come out with a weird look on her face. And they're like, what happened? Let's also just say that maybe she also like caught a glimpse of Rochester's face. And so that's why she's coming out so perplexed. And she's like, well, it wasn't a fortune teller lady. It was Edward dressed up like a fortune teller lady. And I don't think he knows that it's not a good disguise. Convinced that he's doing a great job.
I love the idea. See, this is one of the things I'm sure someone has, but like somebody has to write Jane Eyre from the perspective of Blanche, but she's just like a normal nice girl who's in a shitty situation. Because yes. Imagine that like your family told you like you're getting old for being single. There's a guy who lives like relatively close to your family, like pretty close with your family, like seems like a good match. He's single. He's a little weird, but he's got a lot of money. So you could have a pretty nice life if you married him. And then you go to his house and he's like weirdly obsessed with his governess. He like fully abandons you while you guys are singing a duet to go check on her because she like left because she was being like kind of moody in the corner. And to be fair, your mom was being really rude about it. But like, that was very upsetting. And then he like shows up dressed in a fortune teller costume and says rude things to you. And you figure out it's him, but you're like, I really like my family. This matters a lot to my family that I marry this guy. And like, frankly, what else am I going to do with my life? You're just like, I hate this. Like, you're just slowly, as you're spending these like couple of days at Thornfield, you're slowly realizing how nuts this person in this everything is. And the next thing that happens to Blanche is there's a scream in the middle of the night and she's told to not worry about it.
Yes. Oh my God. It's a madhouse. And I feel like we maybe probably talked about this like early on in the show, but I haven't really thought about it since. Like, she goes through all of the stuff that we just described. And then later, like everyone else in the community finds out that, oh, he had a secret wife who then burned the house down. She'd be like, oh my God, like I dodged such a bullet. Holy shit. I'm so glad I wasn't Jane in this scenario, actually.
Be like, just like first you, because like, again, like I want like a speed run of Jane Eyre from Blanche's perspective, where yes. It's like they get invited. This guy who like your family has been trying to hook you up with for a while, like suddenly shows up really dramatically and invites all of you to his house. Mm-hmm. Then all these weird social things that we've talked about happen. Then he like dumps you and gets engaged to the governess after telling you that he's actually poor. So you're like, dodged a bullet because he's poor, dodged a bullet because he's in love with the governess. And then like the day of the wedding, like your ex is getting married, like you're probably like hyper aware of it, especially in this small community. And then like, I'm picturing one of those like boys who run messages across town, like sprinting into your family's living room, about to pass out going, oh my God, he has a wife. What? Rochester has a wife who's been locked in the attic.
Everyone's like, oh my God, what?
Oh my God. And then like the fire happens and all this stuff. And you're like, that's insane. Imagine not even being Blanche, just be that happening anybody. With one of your neighbors.
Yes. Like, holy shit. And then in like modern day, it cuts to like reporters like interviewing people for the community. And it's like, you know, I never would have thought, like, he just seemed like such a nice guy.
I never would have guessed. He seemed so normal. I mean, like, he was kind of a loner, but like, other than that, I don't know.
They're interviewing the chief of the fire department. And he's like, look, we got a lot of like phony calls. And for a while, we kind of wanted to disconnect the line and be like, look, you can't keep making these false like fire phone calls anymore. But then, woof, the house went up in flames. So I guess boy who cries wolf, am I right?
Yeah, we've been called to the house like 3 or 4 times because of fires. And every time like the owner says there was no fire and we like didn't really believe him because there was obvious smoke billowing out of a window. But what can we do? It's his house.
These eccentric types, man, you know, they just push you out, whatever.
It's like he's incredibly wealthy. And he also is like, has a doctor on call who like comes by and like in weird times. And it's just, he has a lot of guests that come in and out again in really weird ways. It's just, like, there was this fortune teller who, like, came to a party of his and then no one ever saw her again. And that felt wrong to me.
There's all kinds of conspiracy theorists who were like, no, he killed her and ate her. It was a whole Sweeney Todd, I swear. Amazing.
So at the end of the episode, we have a fairly standard, end of episode 2, we have a fairly standard Mason scene. Not bad, just boring to watch when you've seen 1,000 of them and you don't speak the language. But they do, again, this is another instance where they pick a different perspective than Jane's, mm-hmm. which did really put that scene is so different when you show it as Rochester. So what they do is Rochester riding as fast as he can across a field. Mm-hmm. And that makes that scene so different because in the book and in most of the adaptations, it's this incredibly stressful moment for Jane. She's very alone in a very scary situation. Mm-hmm. And he's gone for so long. And it's seeing it from that other perspective of Rochester booking it on this horse mm-hmm. across a field. It's just really interesting. I think it's very different from the story, but it's mm-hmm. an interesting perspective.
It is, because again, if we are going to do a thought experiment of like, what is Rochester thinking in this moment? I think mm-hmm. it's a twofold panic scenario. It's I need to get a doctor in case the bleeding is really bad and my brother-in-law bleeds out and dies. Mm-hmm. But then also, I need to get back before he spills the beans and ruins this whole thing for me and the girl that I like.
Yeah. Crazy.
Just crazy. You know what? Honestly, it's so funny. Like, you know, there's no scenario, I feel like, where I would trust the two of them not to, like, talk and have Mason reveal the truth in that moment.
Yeah.
Like, even though, like, in the book and in a lot of the versions, we have him be like, Mason, if you say a fucking word, like, I'll kill you myself. And it's just like, Jesus, dude, what the hell? So, like, why can't, apart from, like, you know, for the plot, we want this, like, scene of scary tension, gothic, like, suspense. But, like, doesn't it make more sense for Rochester to stay with Mason and be like, Jane, take the carriage and go get the doctor? Like, why?
I think... Now that you're saying that, that does make sense, but I think it's almost chivalrous of him to go do it himself, because it would be really dangerous for a woman in the middle of the night to either you have to include another person, which would be like a carriage driver, or Jane has to go ride a horse and do this herself, which is really dangerous. We know Jane's not really a horse girl. So it is, all the options are insane. The best options are include more people in your scheme, you crazy lunatic. Like, the lunatic here being Rochester. Like, do a little bit to make this not a nightmare.
He's like, nah, nightmare all the way. I've already gone this far. There's no turning back now.
That, I think, is it. We've talked about this before. I was just talking about this with a friend of ours the other day, not specifically with Jane Eyre, but about something else, where it's like you do things a little bit at a time until it stops seeming so insane. And then suddenly your wedding's being interrupted because you have a wife locked in the attic. Like, he starts with, I don't want people to know about her. It's safest for her to be, like, locked up in the attic. I'm just not going to have people around the house. It's going to be a secret. It'll be fine. What's going to happen? And I'm going to go find someone to love in a different country. And then you, like, go have a French daughter. Like, more and more people get involved in this, but, like, you come up with the plan, you come up with the lie that you tell, you stick to the lie that you tell, you stick to the lie that you tell, and then you meet your governess, and you're like, oh, like, I'm definitely not going to tell her, because I love her, and then it's, well, I probably want to marry her, well, if I want to marry her, then I really have to keep this a secret, and then suddenly in the middle of the night, you have to leave her alone with somebody who's been maimed while you go get the doctor, but you can't bring anybody else in because then they'll know the secret.
Hashtag relatable. Am I right?
It's a thing that happens to all of us.
Snowball effect. She goes off to see Aunt Reed. I totally just fast forwarded through that whole part. I did not care.
It was, the line's pretty standard. She has a nice, lovely tea with Bessie. Her cousin is actually really nice to her. Those are probably the biggest differences.
Cool. Good to know. They come back and he's like flirting with her right away. He touches her hand when they're in the library.
Which is so cute.
It is pretty cute.
And then Adele runs in.
Yeah. And I don't know what she actually said, but it sounded like she was like, mom, essentially. And I was like, that's cute. Like when you call your teacher mom by accident, but that one's embarrassing.
I didn't translate that part. So, but it had a very similar energy for sure to like, we haven't mentioned this so far, but they have an incredibly cute Adele, like a really cute Adele.
Yes, they definitely aced that one. The proposal scene happens and it's daytime and Jane's hair is down. And she's like out in the woods drawing. And there's several scenes in this where she's outside on the grounds and Rochester like sees her and approaches from behind and like gets really close to her. And then he's like, hello. And she's like, oh, hi, you're right here in my space. Okay. again, feels very CW to me.
The big note that I had from that scene, which especially if you weren't watching it very closely, which we've both admitted to not doing. I noticed this in a couple other scenes as well, but particularly the scenes that were outside. They very clearly were like they did, what is it called after when they do the audio afterwards? You just told me this the other day.
ADR.
ADR. Mm-hmm. So they clearly were doing ADR. And it was not good. And it felt like watching, I'm like, at this point, you may as well be saying it in, this may as well be dubbed in English. Like,
yes.
It was, yeah, it was not at all the words that the people were saying on screen. But I will say I did really like the music during that scene.
Yeah.
And the music overall was pretty good. It sort of, it felt a little bit in between where there are a lot of dramatic dun-dun-duns and zooms the way that we have in some of the other TV shows that are really dramatic at the time. But it also had music that I felt told that more subtle story. And in this proposal scene, it was, there was these sort of mixed themes of like really romantic and lovely and like very peaceful. And then there was this underlying bass piece. I don't know a lot about music. That was a little bit more ominous. So it was this really like the overall song felt very like romantic and lovely as you would expect from a proposal, but there was some unease underneath that, which I really enjoyed.
Totally. I felt that it was fun to watch this one in particular because I was like, as soon as I clocked it as the proposal scene, like there are the way that they kind of like the tempo at which they said certain lines, I was like doing my best to quote what I remember the lines being in English over the top of it, which I felt lined up fairly well. And I was like, I think this is where they're doing this part and this part and this part. So that was kind of fun. She says, yes, obviously they have a nice kiss and a hug and all this jazz. She's left-handed, by the way, because like when they showed her drawing, she was drawing with her left hand, which I found interesting. And they run inside and it's raining and they do a little kiss hug in the hallway. And Miss Fairfax
sees.
They don't kiss. And
they do a really dramatic hug.
Oh, yes. He spins her around because they're so excited. And then like the next scene is where I was like, what scene is this? Because the next scene is kind of like their brief, like happiness before the wedding moment. And he's playing piano for her, which is really cute. And like the tension between them was odd. And I surmised that this is the scene where she must have like told him about the experience of having somebody rip her veil and be in her room. And that's when he's like, it's a dream. Because there's a moment where like, she seems upset and he like shouts about something, but then they like come back together, like as if he's like denying. He's like, no, like I thought if anything, my guess was that he was like, you know, in a year and a day, I'll tell you the truth or whatever. Don't ask me questions.
Yeah, it was it. I also was confused by that scene. So I did go back and have Google Translate pull a couple things there. And that's why at the end of that scene, he brings Mrs. Fairfax in. She's telling him about Mrs. Fairfax seeing them and how disappointed she looks and how she like, it's the whole like, we should be normal until we get married. And he's like, no, I want to start having sex right away.
And do lots of kisses.
So that's what that tension was. But yeah, they played the tension up enough that it seemed like the conflict about the dream. Like I also was like confused about which one it was. And that's when I use my cheating trick of Google Translate.
Gotcha. They get married. It's a pretty slow process. We get most of the ceremony before it's interrupted.
That's what we mean by this being a particularly boring one.
Yeah.
We watched a wedding ceremony in a language we don't speak for a wedding we know isn't going to happen.
Exactly. And he takes them up to see Bertha and she does a great lunge from off screen to attack him. And I was like, nice. Did they springboard her? That was great.
I have a quick, I'm going to show Piper an image. And then I'm going to describe it to you guys. So this was from the interruption, right? They have the whole, like the lawyer interrupts and then Mason comes in. And this was how they introduced Mason, to the audience. They framed that boy inside of someone else's arm. He leans forward. The camera is on someone who has their hand on their hip. The lawyer has his hand on his hip. And then Mason leans forward to peek through his arm. And it just was one of those moments where, like, it was so, like, the framing was so intentional that you know they spent a lot of time working on this.
Yeah, well, he's the pits, so. Yeah. That's why he's coming through that guy's armpit hole.
That's awesome. But there was a couple other moments like that that made me giggle.
Oh, for sure. But yeah, so we see how crazy Bertha is. She tries to strangle him and all this other stuff. Yep. We get a couple of moments where Rochester afterwards, I mean, again, big, long, slow slog of Jane being alone in her room and dressing her, packing her bag and all this other stuff.
I do think they do a really good job immediately. The actress did a real, in general, I think these actors were really good. I think the pacing was off.
Yeah.
But the way that Jane reacted after the wedding and like after the reveal of Bertha, I think was really good and like very true to the books. And the way, the fact that she didn't have this sort of like emotional release until she's alone felt really true to the books as well, where she's just like really keeping herself together. And then she opens the door to her room and she's not like, we make fun of like the 49, for example, comes to mind with Charlton Heston, where she like gasps and looks like she's going to pass out. And you're like, girl, calm down.
like her face is so distraught.
Where this one, it's much more that like subtle heartbreak of not that you're, she's like very Jane reaction of like, it's, is any of this real? Like all of those questioning heartbreak things, that's not screaming and sobbing. It's just quietly giving up in your room.
Yeah.
And I think they did that really well. They just paced that, those scenes so poorly.
Yes. They just, yeah, they took a long time. And again, if we had the language capabilities, I'm sure we could appreciate it much more. She comes out of the room and like collapses because of the whole like, oh, she hasn't eaten or drunk anything for a long time. And he gets to swoop her up into his
arms.
Which
is always good.
And he carries her back into the bedroom and sets her down on the bed. And I was like, ooh, take that 2008, six, whichever one is the Toby Stevens Army one. They did it first. Czech Republic beat you to it.
Yeah. Czech Republic beat you to having Rochester and Jane in bed together.
Yeah. Mmm, spicy. I'm going to rate this an S for spicy. but yeah, they have a whole big long conversation, which I'm sure is very moving if you can understand what they're saying. Lots of staring out of windows. He does the I could tell that he was doing the thing when he like hugs her to him and like gives her little kisses, and he's like, will you leave me now, smooch? And she's like, yes. And he's like, will you leave me now, smooch? And she's like, yes. So they did that whole thing. And then, God, we get to the worst part. Like,
I literally hear, I have three. So every other, I didn't take a lot of notes for this. But every other episode, I have like, I don't know, between 10 and 20 bullet points. For episode four, I have three. My first bullet point is, this is deeply boring.
Yes.
The episode four, imagine having to watch St. John be terrible and boring. You know exactly what's going to happen. He's just terrible and boring in a language you don't speak. It was so rough to watch. And I know that we're complaining to you like we didn't do this to ourselves.
I know, yes. But luckily, I did not feel guilty at all. We've both confessed about skipping over St. John scenes.
Yeah.
And with this one, I like just, I tried to hover around for a little bit, but I'm like, yep, he's still just talking at her and being an asshole, so I'm just going to keep going.
I skipped like the center of a lot of those scenes. We watch it on YouTube too, which is so much easier to skip forward on YouTube.
Yeah. But it cuts to her right away. She has her position in the school because immediately we see her in this room and there's a child. And I was like, what's up with this kid? And then it made sense that this was like, she's already has her position as a school teacher here.
Yeah. Cause the end of episode three is St. John finding her on the road.
Yeah. And God, the impression that I got from the scenes that I lingered on before skipping to just getting back to her returning to Thornfield is any scene that St. John is in with her, I said this in my summary, like he just strikes me as a guy who hates women.
Yeah.
Because like especially when his sisters come in, and there's like a scene where Jane and the River sisters are all like giggling together and having a great time, and they've fixed up the house for Christmas and all this stuff, and she's excited to have her family and have this sistership. And he's just sitting in the corner, like clearly being like, I can't wait for these women to stop talking so I can go tell Jane that she has to be my marriage slave. And I'm just like, I hate this man so much.
He would be an incel if he was around today. Like that's the kind, that's the vibe that he gives. This is like, he genuinely, it makes me, St. John as a character, and they did a good job of, even though we skipped over it and even though we did all these other things, like, I still hated him. So I think they did do a good job of that. it's just that I hate that. But he just, St. John is, at the end of the day, St. John is the worst.
Yeah.
It's for easy. So many reasons. And it's because he's so sure that he's right. Mm-hmm. He has no interest in learning from anyone else. He genuinely believes that his gut feelings are God telling him to do things. So he is walking around with the certainty that what he thinks is what God wants.
Yeah.
And therefore, it is not only right for him to tell other people what to do, but it is wrong for him not to. Like, yeah. He thinks that his need to control people is God telling him that he should be in charge. Mm-hmm. And I hate it so much.
Yeah. Note to creative writers out there, if you've written yourself a traumatic villain love interest and you've made him do horrendous things and you're like, how can I justify this to my audience? Just write a St. John character as her other option and boom, people will take the murderer any day. It's like, yeah, maybe he like is a warlord, but you're an asshole. So I'm not going to stick around with you.
He actually likes me and doesn't think that loving me is like a fun, funny, unnecessary thing.
And hasn't used the phrase, you're made for labor, not love, which is like, holy shit, dude.
If you as an author ever want to indicate to me that I shouldn't like a character, slip that line in there somewhere.
There you go. It's a nice little nod.
But one thing I did like it's not like I were like, the beginning was boring, but then like the reunion was so good. The whole thing was boring. Yep. They do the whole innkeeper scene, which is like, again, it's lovely when an adaption is true to the book, mm-hmm. but wow, is the pacing off. We watch her take her entire journey back. So she hears Rochester's voice. They do that whole mirror thing, which I did skip. So it was fun to learn that from you, Piper. And then she gets back to the town. She doesn't see Thornfield burnt down before. So we find out about that from the innkeeper explaining it to her. And then she goes back. We get her whole reunion with the staff. Mm-hmm. We have a full like two scenes where she's in the room with Rochester and they're not talking, which P.S. this Rochester's injuries are just his eyes are closed.
Yes. He's just the exact same guy, but he's closed his eyes.
it feels like he was just really sad after Jane left and his house burnt down and he just went, I'm gonna close my eyes now. Yeah, it feels like psychosomatic blindness.
It's the visual version of covering your ears and going la 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 la.
Exactly.
I can't see that she's not here. I can make believe that she is.
So then the show ends. They love each other and it's great.
And my theory is that he still has plenty of money because he had a Bengal tiger skin rug on his floor. And I'm like, well, either you saved the Bengal tiger rug from the fire or you just have enough money that you could buy another one. So he's fine financially. They're both wealthy.
Yeah. He had a second house that had a tiger skin rug. I think he's fine.
Yeah. He's going to be okay, guys. He'll learn to open his eyes again someday.
But then the best part of the show happened, which was it was over.
Yay!
And I really loved that.
Yay, me too. I'm going to give this, I'm jumping right into a rating.
Please do.
This is, and it's just, I'm sure if you understand the language, this was lovely. I was bored. This is a 4 out of 10 Bengal tigers for me.
That's so much lower than mine.
Yeah.
I am rating mine based off of what I think this would be mm-hmm. if I understood the words.
Yes.
So I am actually, I was going to put it a 7 out of 10, but unlike our normal trend where when we talk about it, I like it more. We've talked about this and I realized it's not just me being bored today. This was a boring adaption. So I am going to give it 6 out of 10, which is funny to me because that is the same score I have given every single foreign adaption.
Boy, it takes a lot to get out of that 6 range.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it 4 out of 10.
No, I'm 4 out of 10.
No, you're 6. Sorry. Thank you. Wow.
I call dibs on 4s, Lillian.
What was your scale?
Bengal tigers.
Bengal tigers. Okay. I'm going to do 6 out of 10 Beautiful Janes. Because nice. I do think this actress did a really good job of playing Jane. Yeah. And the moments that were, there was a lot of moments that were reliant on her face, probably because she's so gorgeous. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, she wasn't just gorgeous. She was also a really good actress.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm going to rate it. And I do think, I'm curious where you think this falls relative to, if you're looking at that, not just your enjoyment, but mm-hmm. overall as a production of Jane Eyre, where do you think this falls in our non-English adaptations?
Oh, I think it's probably on the high end of the non-English okay. adaptations. I think Sang Dil is still my favorite. Mm-hmm. I think this would probably be second best. I would imagine just because of how accurate it seemed and they yeah. put a lot of care, I think, into the adaptation and being true to that. So, and the production was good and the acting seemed like it was good from what I could tell. So probably second best.
I think if I'm looking at it,
my four.
I know. This is by far the lowest set of your ratings.
I just got so bored at the end.
Because you gave Sang Dil an 8 and then you gave the other two 7s.
Okay.
But I think our scores also incorporate how much we enjoyed it. And mm-hmm. I would say I've enjoyed watching every single one way more than I enjoyed watching this. Yeah. But when I'm more objective about what I think the quality of this was mm-hmm. versus the quality of the other ones, I personally would put it as tied with Sang Dil. I think cool. it was really good.
Nice.
It just, there's a couple pacing things that I would change, but that's true with a lot of the Jane Eyre adaptations we watch. Mm-hmm. This also was significantly shorter than the other two, the Italian and the Spanish one. Sang Dil's a movie, so that's 2.5 hour long movie.
Yeah.
Where this is a 4-episode TV show that comes in just under 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And the other two were closer to 8 hours. So yeah. in that case, it definitely deserves some bonus points.
For sure. Brevity,
if this had been 8
it.
Hours, I wouldn't have watched it.
Yeah, no. Can you imagine? Oh, my God.
If they had had her childhood paced like this.
Oh,
no. Oh, my God.
They would have lost the audience. No one would have watched.
They would have lost the audience of us. We would have come back and been like, I know we said we were going to watch the Czech one. We can't do it.
That was honestly what I was wondering when I was watching this. I was like, can you imagine, because it was on television in the Czech yeah. Republic, turning on the TV and this is happening. And if it happens to be one of the scenes where it's just like, you know, Jane is staring out a window or Sinjin is being an asshole, it'd be like, okay, next, like change the dial. Like who's sticking around to watch this?
It reminds me of when I was little, my brothers and I would watch, they were like, we would watch Cartoon Network or we'd watch Nickelodeon or we'd watch Disney Channel. But every once in a while there'd be nothing, like there'd be shows we actively didn't like on those. So we couldn't agree on it. So we just turned to TV Land and sometimes it would be like, I Dream of Jeannie or I Love Lucy, like something really like fun that we mm-hmm. enjoyed watching and actually liked. And then other times it would be like really weird classic movies that we like I could imagine we've accidentally watched Jane Eyre that way, where it's like, but we didn't, we would watch for like 5 or 10 minutes and it would just be us roasting this weird movie being like, what is going on?
I was gonna say doing your own like Mystery Science Theater 2000.
Exactly. That's how, like, that would be a fun way to watch this. But I also think, like, the thing that I was imagining while watching this was, imagine that you are in the Czech Republic, you love Jane Eyre, you've gotten a translation of the book, you've read the book, you've watched some of the movies, but you haven't, but like, it's hard to get, like, it's the 70s, it's probably impossible to get a version that is fully dubbed. It's hard to get versions that you can watch that aren't just in English. And then you can finally see the story that you love in your native language. Like that would yeah. be a really positive experience. And to have it be such a true adaptation, that would be a really, really, lovely thing. So that's what I was thinking about while I was watching this.
Aw, way to end it on a good note, Lillian.
Yeah.
Good job.
They did a thing, and I'm proud of them for it.
Yeah, and we should end on a good note, since this is, again, our last adaptation of Jane Eyre that we're going to talk about.
The last film one. We have a book that we're reading, and we're going to be talking about that not next week, but the following week.
True, yes.
But this is the last one that we're watching.
Yeah. So it's been fun. we've seen every visual medium representation of this that we could get our grubby little hands on.
Yes.
And
we do have experts. Yep.
I think upsetting I put me. On. So Lillian is a LinkedIn specialist. And so can you find a way for us to get a certification on LinkedIn that says how many Jane Eyre adaptations we've watched? Nice. Please do.
But the next week, what we are talking about next week. So this is our last video adaptation. We have that book that we're reading, but we do have, I believe it's 4 episodes left. So next week, nope. Yes. 5. Sorry. Okay. We have 5 episodes left. This matters to me more than it does to anybody else. but next week we're doing another theme episode. It's one that we've been teasing for quite a while. We are going to be talking about the theme of nature in Jane Eyre. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about it quite a bit in different areas. We alluded to it quite a bit in our episode on the Gothic elements of Jane Eyre. And we're going to spend all of next week talking about trees and rivers and stuff.
Yay. And little salamanders crawling on rocks. Yes. And birds. Birds are important in Jane Eyre.
So with that, if you have thoughts and feelings about nature that you want us to think about before that episode is up and recorded, you got to send it right now today. Hopefully you're listening to it on the day this comes out. But you can send those to airbuds@gmail.com or just comment on every single post we have on Instagram at airbuds. That is on Instagram, what I will continue to call Twitter. We're on YouTube,
Facebook.
Thank you. We're on the internet. Yeah. You can find us there.
Yeah. It's out there. Search us, baby. And, leave a 5-star review on your podcast of choice. Cause it can still help for the last few episodes we've got. Cause that's nice.
And it makes us feel good. Don't you want to make us feel good?
Also, this stuff, like, once it's on the internet, it's there forever. We had somebody, I think, comment. I couldn't remember if it was on Instagram or a nice email, but they're like, please don't delete the episodes. I want to go back. And it's like, don't worry. They're not going anywhere. Yeah. You can listen to us anytime. Yes. Yeah.
They'll all still be there. And in fact, if you want to, I'm still putting a bunch of new videos up on YouTube and I'm still working to make more. I'm turning our videos, our episodes into video episodes with like montages from the movies. So we have 3 of our 7 book episodes up already. I'm working on the 4th one right now. They're not in order because I did chapter 27 first, which is weirdly popular globally. That's got quite a few views in a way that has pleasantly surprised me.
Yay. As we've said, with this Czech episode, this is a universal novel and a universal story that matters.
And therefore, we are universal celebrities. The universe will know about us.
Yes. Yes. Ha ha. So we'll see you in the next astral plane of existence as our essences burn on for infinite nights. happy Jane Eyre reading and watching, you guys.
Bye.
We'll see you next week.